hate New York City. That town's a little bit too rugged for you and me, you bad girl.
You're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The Los Angeles Lakers being a contender is better for the NBA overall. They're one of those franchises that's a lightning rod. You either love them or you hate them. There's really no in between. The team hasn't made the playoffs since the 12-13 season.
Mamba out.
Here comes LeBron.
That's what real men do.
Magic Johnson's first big free agent and an opportunity to restore Lakers glory.
I'm Magic Johnson. I'm going to do my job.
All those eyeballs on Los Angeles, that just makes the sport so much more compelling and entertaining.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Producer Manny, a little cunning and clever and crafty, considering that in 4 years, the Olympic Games will be based in Los Angeles. And so, thinking ahead, can you imagine the number of athletes? Michael Phelps mentioned this as part of the swimming coverage on Sunday, what it might have been like to swim on home soil or native soil, as he said, after Léon Marchand was just showered in praise and adoration, and the crowd was so incredible. For the French swimmer, here he is 22 years old and has been anticipating this opportunity for years. And Michael Phelps said, I never had that chance. And I can't even imagine what that would have been like. Even as we're starting the top of the hour here, it's 1 a.m. on the West Coast. It's 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A lot of people waking up to start their work week. And it is 10 a.m. in Paris. Not that this is live at the moment, but still have NBC on in studio. And even though I've already seen this, it's kind of amazing to watch again. Simone Biles and the rest of Team USA are going through their qualifiers for the team final. So again, you already know, I told you just a few minutes ago, the Americans are 5+ points ahead of the next closest nation in this team event. But to see Simone in her triumphant return to competition after what happened in Tokyo, I mean, this is why so many celebrities have shown up. Tom Cruise, Peyton Manning, obviously Snoop Dogg. I know some of you have commented that you're already tired of seeing him. But John Legend and Chrissy Teigen are in-house there. Omaha!
Omaha!
And I'm just selecting a few that I can remember. I think Lady Gaga is also in the arena. So there are a lot of celebrities there to see Simone Biles and then to see the superstars for Team USA in men's basketball as well. But she's awesome. And so with three of the same teammates that she was with in Tokyo when she had to bow out and really was relegated to cheerleader, trying to be safe and make the smart decision for her, it allowed others like Suni Lee, who won the all-around competition, like Jade Carey, who won gold on floor exercise. I mean, it allowed those Olympians to step into that void and to captivate hearts on the stage. But now they've got their leader and their goat back, and she is locked in. It's pretty impressive to see. And I'm so happy for her with her ginormous smile, that megawatt smile that at 27 years old, if you know her story, even part of her story, you know what she's been through. But to see her smile, it's as though there are no pressures, no weights. She's not carrying anything. She looks free. And freedom for athletes mentally and physically, that's the goal. That's a great place to be, is without the pressure, without the weight, without the expectations. You just kind of let them roll right off you. And she has certainly done that in a way that is palpable. And obviously, like I said, she's the one that people want to see in these Olympic Games. So she moves into the all-around finals. Team USA is tops after the preliminaries in the team competition. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Glad to have you with us as we head into a Monday. What? No. Why can't weekends be longer? That's a question, isn't it? Why can't weekends be longer? Manny, do you have any brilliant answers?
I do not. I was a little bit more worried with the sound that you just made.
Monday.
Yeah.
Did you feel like something was breaking down?
Yeah. No, I almost went in there to make sure things were still working. My goodness.
The AI generated Amy Lawrence just about fell out. Monday.
AI generated Amy also hates Mondays.
Oh yeah. Well, I think that's a thing. I don't know what the work weeks are like outside of the United States, but I certainly know in the U.S. seems like a pretty common refrain. Why can't weekends be longer? Online at A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And then our phone number, if you want to weigh in with your favorite Olympic moments, 855-212-4227. So definitely Simone Biles and her dazzling routines in her return. For sure, Celine Dion and the triumph with which she performed and the emotion, too. Like, we were just talking about what Simone Biles has been through. How about what Celine Dion has been through and is still going through? And what a surprise that was to cap the opening ceremonies, which I didn't watch, but my mom had alerted me that I better not miss Celine Dion. So I did not. I was able to catch her entire performance on YouTube, including the reaction of the crowd, which is pretty incredible because, as I say, it was kept a secret from pretty much everyone. So she starts singing high up above the rest of Paris and the opening ceremonies and underneath the Olympic rings, and you can hear the reaction from people all around. So that was awesome. Love to see Kevin Durant, and after a month of not being able to play, him stepping on the court like it's no big thing and going 8 for 8 in the first half to really spark Team USA. Oh gosh, I loved seeing the swimming because that's one of my favorites, especially the first week of these Olympics. I always love in the summertime the swimming. I actually cheer for the swimmers in my living room because that's how excited I get. And man, do they have some tight finishes. And then, yeah, other moments, too, like Tom Cruise taking selfies with fans from all nations. Maybe he is a total jerk behind closed doors, though that's not what I've heard from people who've worked with him. So I've interviewed other actors who've worked with him. He's meticulous. He's perfectionist. And he is certainly type A. And he's also a control freak. However, everyone that I've talked to that's worked with him or things that I've read is that he's also really passionate and supportive of other people too. And so maybe he is a jerk behind closed doors, but when you see him out in public, first of all, he's so happy to be at the Olympics. Tom Cruise is clapping for gymnasts, which I think is awesome. But also there was this shot from NBC on Sunday where he is in the middle of, it took a minute to find him. He's in the middle of this big crowd of people. It doesn't appear as though there's security around him. And he's taking selfies with people. And we're talking about women. I saw a group of Asian women who looked to be older. I don't know how old, but they weren't teenagers, in other words. They looked to be maybe middle-aged women, and they're surrounding him, taking selfies, hugging him. And then you've got teenagers as well who are getting in there for pictures. And he just takes it all in stride. I mean, as much as we're talking about athletes who are household names across the globe, like Simone Biles, I mean, Tom Cruise and his superstardom makes Peyton Manning look like small fry. I mean, he's a household name, and people outside of the United States know who he is, but Tom Cruise is.
Omaha!
Doesn't need to use Omaha. No, Tom Cruise is, he's just that. He's global. He's international. And it was pretty funny to see the reaction to him when they showed him in this crowd of people. Shaun White is there too. They keep showing celebrities in the arena as the U.S. gymnasts are performing, so I'm excited for them. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. All right, we talked about Tua Tagovailoa.
Whatever.
Whatever, says Mike McDaniel. Glad to have his quarterback locked up. Having to deal with a holdout or a sit-in or a hold-in or whatever they want to call it. 4 years, $212.4 million, which is the richest in Dolphins history. However, it was trumped by the quarterback from Green Bay.
Here's the snap, Jordan Love. Looks downfield, throws off the back foot to the end zone.
Yes,
the
shoulder
catch.
Yes.
Touchdown. Dontavian Wicks on the post, and the Packers lead it 20-0.
Well, I know Cowboys fans and Packers fans remember that, to be sure. That was wild card weekend. And it's not as though Jordan Love and the Packers hadn't been dynamic to that point. So the second half of the regular season, we really saw what Jordan Love is capable of as the quarterback. And it took about a half of a year for him to not to get comfortable necessarily, but for him to just find a rhythm and a groove. Remember, he hadn't started when Aaron Rodgers was still there. He'd been with the organization, of course, since 2020, but he hadn't started other than just the one game when,
I don't think so.
Did Aaron Rodgers have COVID? That's right. He had COVID and he missed a start. So I think Jordan Love stepped in for that particular start. But otherwise, it was still Aaron's team. And Jordan didn't have the reins, if you will, until this past season. And so, yeah, it took about a half of a year for him to settle in. The Packers kept saying steadfastly they believed in him. They knew that he was the right guy for the job. They weren't considering pulling him. They weren't going to essentially rip up the blueprint and start all over again. No, they were confident in Jordan Love. And now they've rewarded him with a massive deal, 4 years, $220 million, including $75 million at signing. And he joins Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow as the highest paid quarterback in NFL history with $55 million per year in a salary.
I'm truly blessed and grateful and humbled to be put in this position. It's taken a lot of hard work, dedication, and sacrifices, not only from me, but from so many people around me. I want to say thank you to the Green Bay Packers organization, also my agents, Dave Mulligetta, Andrew Kessler, for being able to finalize this deal. I want to say thank you to my family for their love and support. They've been with me through it all. I also want to thank my teammates and coaches for being patient with me throughout this process. None of this is possible without them. I'd like to thank our fans. I feel like we have the best fans in the league.
Oh, that's cool. I like to hear from Jordan Love. He already sounds like he is immersed as a Green Bay Packer. And certainly when you consider the run of quarterbacks the Packers have had over the past, three plus decades now, nearly four decades, you're talking Brett Favre, Hall of Famer, Aaron Rodgers, future Hall of Famer, and now Jordan Love. And I'm not suggesting he's a Hall of Famer yet. Obviously, there's no way. But for him to be on top of the NFL's pay scale, along with Trevor and Joe at $55 million per year, and the fact that the Packers rewarded him after just one full season as a starting quarterback, that shows you they believe that he's just barely scratching the surface, that the Packers are just scratching the surface with Jordan. And Brian Gutekunst, I mean, he's raving about him as well this weekend.
As we moved along and he progressed, and we realized that, you know, he was going to be the next guy. And then seeing how he handled that this past year, becoming the guy, handling that pressure, coming out the other side of it, just gave us a lot of confidence, I think, that this is a guy that's going to lead us into the future. And we're really excited about that.
Certainly may seem like a drastic move, but honestly, going back to 2020 when they traded up to get Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers was still very firmly entrenched as their starting QB, Packers are taking the unconventional approach when it comes to their quarterback.
I'm offended.
But Jordan Love has handled all of this pressure extremely well. And I think that is so critical. The fact that he has handled all the spotlight from when the Packers moved up to get him in the first round in 2020 and all the reaction because Aaron Rodgers was still, at that point, he was still very much one of the best, entrenched as one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And he was, I mean, he won another MVP right after that, right? The 2020 year was his next MVP. He and the Packers were not in any way, at least at that point, talking breakup or him moving on. That really wasn't a narrative or a storyline at that point, but it became that way when they drafted Jordan Love. Then he sits behind Aaron for a couple of seasons, waits through all the iterations and the hamster wheel conversations over and over and over again of whether or not Aaron and the Packers would be going separate ways. Twice they came back together. Think about when Aaron ghosted the team and wouldn't communicate with anyone during that 2020 offseason because he was so ticked off at the general manager and everything else that happened around Jordan getting drafted. So, yeah, it was divisive. Aaron was divisive. It was certainly tense at times. And I'm sure there were moments where Jordan thought, okay, this is it. It's finally my turn. Only to have Aaron come back and hold the franchise hostage again, in a manner of speaking. And so, yeah, here you go. Jordan Love, this is great validation for him with this contract before he would ever get to that fifth year of his rookie deal. And yeah, the general manager who had a relationship with Aaron Rodgers in which at times they butted heads, when Aaron publicly criticized him, they're thrilled with Jordan and the way last season wrapped up.
There's no absolutes in this business, as you guys know. And but certainly he was a very gifted player. As we got to know him in the pre-draft process, you know, who he was fit what we wanted here, you know, and from a culture perspective. We thought he had a, you know, really, there was nothing he couldn't do that we were going to ask of our quarterback.
I like that. So happy. There's a honeymoon period there in Green Bay, and it's lasted longer than a year. And I dare say there could be some whispers. I don't know if you want to say it out loud, but I will. The Packers were right. They got it right again. Just like they did when it was Aaron Rodgers who got drafted to be the heir apparent to Brett Favre. Remember how upset Brett was and how he retired and then unretired and the Packers and had already moved on and didn't want him? Well, I would say they made the right call with Aaron Rodgers. Now, granted, you don't know whether or not Aaron would have torn his Achilles four snaps into the season for the Packers. But after seeing what you did from Jordan Love in the second half of the year, who cares? Who cares what Aaron Rodgers did or didn't do with the Jets? You made the right choice and you gave the job to Jordan at the right time.
And I am, you know, not, you know, egomaniacal.
In any way at all. And by the way, hearing that call with Wayne Larrabee on Packers Radio, oh, it gives me a thrill. It certainly does. We're getting so close to NFL play-by-play again, and it always gives me just a charge, a supercharge in my heart and in my soul. I'm trying to keep it under wraps, though, because we got a long way to go, I guess, theoretically, 5 weeks. So I don't want to get ahead of myself. But Tua and Jordan Love both getting new contracts over the weekend. And now there's talk about Dak Prescott, though. I kind of feel like there should be talk about Patrick Mahomes, considering that he is falling even farther down the list of most expensive QBs. And yet still... Yeah, most valuable QB, no doubt. Oh, speaking of MVP, actually, Lamar Jackson was back at practice over the weekend, which is good because he'd missed some time being sick. Let's see, a little bit of baseball because we're getting close to the trade deadline. And Jazz Chisholm, he was traded from the Marlins to the Yankees. Loves Derek Jeter. Who doesn't? Player of that age. It's like, I love LeBron James. I love Tom Brady. Well, Jazz Chisholm and anybody his age loves Derek Jeter. So Jazz can't wear number 2 because that's unavailable. But he gets a different number, a new number in the Yankees lineup. And I think he was only got to town. So they were taking on the Red Sox this weekend. Only got to town maybe 3 hours before first pitch. It might not have even been that long. And he was already in the lineup for the Yankees and making an impact for them over the weekend. So we still have a couple days left for the trade deadline. But the Yankees made a move, the Cubs making a move as well. The Rays appear to be holding a fire sale, which is disheartening, no doubt, for their fans. And it's not even like they're holding out for anything really impressive in return. So it's kind of odd. I'm interested to hear from the Rays at some point, but you will at least hear from Jazz Chisholm and also the phenomenon of guys finding out either mid-game or just before a game that they're getting traded. Man, that still blows me away. Who was it that cried? It was the Met that was on the field that cried.
That would be Wilmer Flores.
Yes, Wilmer Flores. Because it turned out to not be true that year anyway. But remember, fans in the stands were talking to him because they were seeing on their phones that Wilmer was about to be traded. So it's circulating through the stadium. He hears about it. He's out at second base crying. I mean, it was all a big brouhaha. Yeah, let's hope it's nothing that dramatic as we head up to this edition of the trade deadline on Tuesday. Glad to have you with us. Good morning to you if you're just waking up. Happy final Monday of July. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Well, a lot of trade rumors, and now I see Morrell is being congratulated and people are extending best wishes to him as he has found out that he's been traded. It's a part of the game, and it's a difficult part of the game sometimes. We always try to be respectful, Ron, realizing that these are, yes, they're big league ball players. Yes, they're great athletes and have a very special talent. But at the end of the day, they are human beings, just like everyone else. They have families. They have concerns. They have personal lives, relationships, and they're very young men also. Yeah. That's another thing you have to keep in mind.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
On the Chicago Cubs radio network, that's the other half of the trade that sends Christopher Morrell to Tampa Bay while All-Star Isaac Paredes goes back to Chicago. A couple of prospects in this deal as well that was announced live on the air on Sunday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So yeah, pretty crazy to think about. And I have spoken to athletes in the wake of big trades in which they've had to pick up, pack their bags, move, leaving behind family, in some cases kids, or I've even spoken, remember it was a soccer player, and he had been traded, and he and his wife had to pick up and move with very little notice, and it happened 3 or 4 times. Can you imagine some of the journeyman careers of athletes where it's not just one time, but every trade deadline that comes along, you kind of brace for it because you think, rut-row, here goes again. But yeah, how much that can disrupt the life that you have made, the roots that you have grown, just the bloom where you're planted type of thing in a community. And then all of a sudden, your job just trades you somewhere else and you have no recourse, no recall.
My favorite part about, maybe not my favorite, but the most interesting part is when they just simply have no idea as well. I mean, I remember when one of my friends was traded in the Max Scherzer trade that saw him go from Washington to LA. My friend was in that deal. It was his 21st birthday.
Whoa.
And Josiah Gray, I texted him. I said, hey, I just saw that you got traded. He had no idea of any information that he had. So, I mean, he didn't have any information at all. So, I mean, it's incredible that, you know, they just walk up to them. You wake up one day, you go to the ballpark, and before the game or in the midst of the game, Skipper comes up to you. Hey, bud, you gotta take you out of the game. You're moving.
Pack your stuff.
Pack your stuff. You're moving to Chicago. You're moving to Tampa.
Can get blindsided, right? Even if your name has been tossed about or people have been, in the case of the Rays, people have been speculating about Tampa Bay essentially divesting itself of a few different pieces. This is still tough when you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting and there's talk and there's rumors and there's speculation. You're asking your agent every day, what have you heard? What do you know? It still isn't any less jarring when it happens. But yes, as Manny points out, it can also be a complete blindside. So we see Paredes ends up with the Cubs and is expected to join the lineup right away. Weirdly enough, too, because I thought Jed Hoyer had talked about how they were really only focused on making deals and moves for the future. And yet I would think Parides would be a boost to them immediately, considering he's an all-star. And so we'll watch that move. I know we have our friends in Chicago listening on AM 670, The Score. Hello. And the Rays, meanwhile, are just kind of shipping pieces all over the country as they essentially dismantle what was a lineup that was above 500 and yet in the AL East where things are super tough. And even making a wild card in the American League, you can imagine it's going to be quite a battle out of the East. Well, the Yankees, they're trying to figure out how to bolster their lineup. So they're in a battle right now with the Orioles atop the AL East. But remember, the Yankees started out like a house on fire, a torrid start to the season. And then over the last 5 or 6 weeks, they've been one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball. So they bring in Jazz Chisholm from the Marlins. And yeah, he's actually thrilled to be moving north.
No, it was super exciting. I mean, every kid dreams of being a Yankee. You know, it's the most famous team in baseball that Derek Jeter played on, you know what I mean? So everybody's favorite player was Derek Jeter growing up. I had him as an owner, so I just feel like it was only right to come. It was great. I mean, I found out that I was going to go to a contending team, a team that was in first place fighting for a playoff spot. And, I mean, I'm excited to play in October for the Yankees.
Book it. Jazz Chisholm is excited to play in October for the Yankees. But seriously, put yourself in his shoes. He's with the Marlins, and he ends up getting traded to the Yankees. Derek Jeter was the owner of the Marlins for a time when he was there. He says everyone's favorite player growing up was Derek Jeter. And here he is. Now wearing pinstripes, although they were on the road in Boston, so the Grays, he's able to join a team that has championship aspirations and also make some noise in his first game as a member of the Yankees. So he was in that lineup despite joining the team just a few hours before first pitch. He goes 1-for-5, does have a strikeout, but played center field for them. And so Aaron Judge was the DH on Sunday. And the Yankees, they're a game back of the Orioles. It's too early to be scoreboard watching, but just for context, they're a game back of the O's in the East standings. And right now, Baltimore and New York have the same number of wins. They're one win behind the Guardians, who are still pacing the field there in the American League. So this is a race for best record and for AL East title, not to mention other wild card spots that is likely to be hotly contested the rest of the way. So yeah, a huge deal for these teams at the top to be making moves. I just love Chisholm's reaction, though. I'm excited to be playing for the Yankees in October, as in book it. And also first time that he's been part of the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry.
Oh, it was sick. Today is actually my first time being a part of a crowd like that, nice. Being there for it and hearing the rivals and hearing everybody yelling Yankees and Red Sox, and I think it was pretty sick.
Ow! Ow!
Not that kind of sick, John Sterling. So, yeah, think about that again. From the poor Marlins, who, while they do have other teams in their division that they'll play and blah, blah, it's not anywhere near the same intensity or excitement that you would get from Red Sox-Yankees or Cubs-Cardinals or Giants-Dodgers or any of these amazing rivalries that we've come to almost take for granted as fans.
But I just very briefly do want to say that there is a market for baseball in the city of Miami, because you take a look at the World Baseball Classic, mm-hmm. when it's down there, that stadium is packed to the upper deck. So, fans don't come out to Marlins games, but you know what? It seems as though there's a market for baseball in South Beach.
Well, there's a lot of international families and fans who've ended up there. Mm-hmm. A lot of Hispanic cultures that come together, Cubans.
Colombians. And, Colombians. Thousands of Colombians.
I can imagine from many of the Central America countries, not to mention some of the islands that are south of the Caribbean islands, south of Florida.
Miami.
Yeah, it's a bit of a melting pot for a lot of those cultures. And what do they love? Well, they love sports, of course. In many cases, soccer, football would be number one, but also the passion that they bring when it comes to cheering for either their country or for another country that's in close proximity, or another country that they border. So I tell this story sometimes. I was in Miami for the World Cup in, let's see, don't tell me, it was for the World Cup in 2010. So I was in Miami, and I was on my way to Ecuador. So I was had a long stopover in Miami, and I remember we spent some time on South Beach, and then we found this cafe on right on the beach, and it was not only packed to the gills, an incredible atmosphere. People were streaming out into the street because they were watching the World Cup. And so that was huge. I remember that atmosphere. But then when I got to Ecuador, walking through one of those outdoor markets, every single stall, every single one had either a radio or a tiny black and white TV, and they were watching World Cup games. Ecuador hadn't qualified for the World Cup, but they were passionate in rooting for some of the other nations nearby, so either South American or Central American nations. And yeah, so I know the passion. I've been part of it in airports, in cafes, on South Beach, in other countries. And yeah, it's so true, as Manny points out. They'll show up when it comes to either their international passion or national passion, but also if the team is a winner. If they feel like there's something to cheer for, and that's not been the case for the Marlins consistently.
Beer, music, flags, sports, we're there. Latinos will be there.
I love it. Online at A-Law Radio, what about your favorite moments from this first weekend of the Olympics? And then I put mine up so you can check them out. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Peter Schwartz.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
Here I am. It's After Hours. Here with me, your host, who's a big Olympic shill. I do really enjoy the Olympics. And as much as it's fun to see the events live, because we have the option here while we're on the air, I also really enjoy the primetime presentation as well. I think Mike Tirico does a terrific job kind of tree-topping the top stories. And then you have a chance to catch the best moments and some of the cool stories that you might not otherwise know about, whether it's Team USA or whether it's from another nation. So I had not heard of Léon Marchand. And he is about to put his name next to Michael Phelps in the record books, or even eclipse Michael Phelps in many cases. But the idea of being able to swim in front of all of those passionate French fans who were there and the noise they make inside the arena, that was awesome to watch. And as I said, and if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend that you go and check it out. After he set an Olympic record in the 400 meter individual medley freelay, or individual medley, excuse me. It's not a relay. That's a different race. So he did all four strokes in the individual medley, and it's up and back in the pool for each stroke. And when he was doing the breaststroke, and you pop out of the water, right? So you're underneath kind of with the stroke, and then you pop out, you get your breath, you're down underneath the water again in this breaststroke. And the fans have it timed so that whenever he comes out of the water, they yell so he can hear them. I imagine he can hear some of the noise under the water, but maybe it's muted a bit. It was pretty incredible because they've got it. After a couple of strokes, they figure it out exactly when he's popping out of the water, and they give off this big roar just so he knows that they are there and they're behind him and they're pulling for him. And I just can't even imagine that atmosphere. Even Michael Phelps, who was part of the NBC broadcast, was raving about the fans and the support that Marchand was getting.
The French, in my opinion, have been great. I mean, you mentioned, what's his name? Léon Marchand. Everybody cheering for Léon. I caught the tail end of, what was it, Rugby Sevens gold medal. France against Fiji in the Stade de France. And, man, it was just absolutely electric. I watched the French's first basketball game, caught a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely electric. The French fans are really on one to start the Olympics.
Right, and not just the French, too. If you were watching Team USA versus Serbia, that arena was electric and energetic. And it made me think about, shoot, what's it going to be like in 4 years in L.A.? And I hope that it's like this, right? We may not have these same athletes. It's kind of a group of old dudes because of Steph Curry making his Olympic debut. He's 36. LeBron, 39. KD's in his mid-30s. You've got a bunch of guys who are older and yet still terrific. Obviously represent a longstanding tradition with men's basketball. But the way that the crowd was informed, booing every time Joel Embiid touched the ball, which is kind of funny. His decision to play for Team USA instead of France. The way that they were making noise kind of reminded me a little bit of a World Cup game. I know it's sacrilegious maybe to some of you who are footy fans, but the noisemakers, they weren't vuvuzelas, but they were definitely noisemakers there inside the arena. And you can see and watch the athletes feed off of that energy.
Personally, I can't wait for a 65-year-old LeBron James to lead us to gold in 2028. Crypto.com Arena, downtown LA, getting the gold medal. 75-year-old LeBron James.
65 years old. So yeah, favorite Olympic moments. Love to hear from you at A-Law Radio as well as on our Facebook page. After Hours with Amy Lawrence, the big controversy, if there is one, for Team USA is no Jason Tatum. And there was a lot of speculation online that there might be something wrong with the Boston Celtics leader, but instead, he just didn't play. It was Steve Kerr's decision, DNP CD, which is DNP, does not play, coach's decision. So after the top of the hour, you'll hear Steve Kerr explain.
I felt like an idiot.
Right, why he feels like an idiot. Also, Team USA in women's soccer, onto the quarterfinals already. Some of the younger players leaving a mark. It's been really neat to see Sophia Smith kind of come into her own on this Olympic stage. We've talked about Simone Biles. We've also talked about some of the Americans in the pool, too. And I got to tell you, I loved watching the horses in the equestrian event, the steeplechase, this was. And they are mesmerizing. Also, I find myself kind of catching my breath every time they jump, just believing and hoping that nothing's going to go wrong on the landing. But gosh, these athletes, some of them, they could leap over obstacles that are another 3-4 feet higher. That's how incredible they are as athletes. And I was thinking about airtime and how much we make of that when it comes to basketball. And yet these horses, man, they're just awesome.
No, horses are elite. I think we were watching the same thing in my household at the same time. And my mom actually got on her phone and actually started looking up how much it would cost to buy a horse. So there's that. You got $700,000 by a chance?
It's tempting, is it? No, oh. I wish. I would buy my own horse.
I want to buy my mom a horse. You don't have $700,000
laying around?
And I
don't even need to have a horse that's an elite steeplechaser. Just any old horse will do. How about a 25-year-old horse who's retired?
That's what I told.
Not even a thoroughbred.
That's what I told her, too. She said $700,000. I'm like, well, you could probably get a horse for, like, I don't know, $10,000, hypothetically speaking, and train it so you can get a little bang for your buck. But what do I know? I'm a New Yorker.
Oh, yeah. They're so cool. And they're different than the ones that you see in, say, the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
These are not horses that are built for speed. And yet some of them, you can tell they run. And so it's neat because as they were doing the coverage there of the equestrian event, they're actually telling you the stories not just of the jockeys, but also of the horses, too. And because they rank the horses, not just the riders. So, yeah, that was really cool. I actually got into that in a big way and really enjoyed watching those incredible animals. So, yeah, if you've got any of your own favorite Olympic moments, we'd love to hear from you. We'll kind of re-rack after the top of the hour. We're hoping at some point that we can connect with Steve Futterman, who's covering the Olympics. But if not, we'll get to him on our next show, Monday night into Tuesday morning. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Oh, whoops. Hadn't done that in such a long time.
Dear.
It had been weeks. I think that's might be grounds for firing, you know?
Oh, wow. Really? Grounds for firing?
No.
That escalated quickly. Wow.
No, not at all. But I like to say it just to get under, to kind of give people a thrill who really would like to see me fired. speaking of a thrill, and I'm going to see if I can, actually I did retweet it, but I'll retweet it again. This is pretty incredible. The winner of the PGA golf event over the weekend, Jonathan Vegas, he actually landed a tee shot in the crook of a police officer's arm. So the police officer is standing there minding his own business, doing his job, and somehow Vegas tee shot lands in the crook of his arm.
Just bloop.
Yeah. I mean, you'll have to go back and watch the video, but the impressive part is that the police officer just stood there. He didn't move.
He just took it.
He didn't take a step. He didn't drop his arm so that the golf ball would drop to the ground. No, no, he cradled it like it was a baby. He stood there and cradled it like it was a baby until Vegas came over and the golf officials were able to figure out what to do. They obviously had to drop it. Not that he's considered a hazard or anything, but
they couldn't do it Happy Gilmore style, playing it off the foot.
No, they could not play it off of his uniform and out of.
Disappointing.
It was maybe 2 inches from where his arm was bent at the elbow. So yeah, he's cradling it like it's a baby. I'm gonna retweet this again at A-Law Radio just because it's so funny. Here's the crazy thought that first popped into my head: if I was not trying to hit the police officer, I probably could. Vegas probably couldn't do that again if he tried another 1,000 times. I mean, it was a once in a lifetime type of a shot that landed in the arms of the police officer. And I think it's pretty impressive moxie of this cop to just stand there and wait.
Don't move. I think that's the most impressive part. Just absolutely not flinching at all.
Nope.
You know how much those things hurt?
Well,
he's definitely welting up,
but maybe not. Oh yeah, it's gonna leave a mark, but maybe not more than, I don't know, getting shot. So,
well, you're not wrong about that.
Yeah, he just stands there, and the cameras are on him, and they're pointing to the golf ball, and he's got this big smile on his face, and the PGA officials, they're hanging out. He's talking to Vegas, he's like, "Hey, well, I got your ball. Don't you worry, I got your ball. I found it. I know where it is. It's right here." So they end up doing a drop, and actually, Vegas goes on to win the tournament too, which is pretty cool. So yeah, check that out at A-Law Radio, or you can easily Google it. It's really funny. You can imagine that. That video and that moment is going to go viral with his department, and they're all going to be, I think he deserves all kinds of credit. They're all going to be ribbing him for being right place, wrong time, or wrong place, right time, either one of those things. Yeah, plenty of great video moments over the weekend. Of course, you know, we do radio around here. We do our best. Wah, wah, wah. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.